Hill, the first call. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. I'm assuming I'm coming through okay with this microphone. My name is Fred Sussman, and I'm a graduate student at UNC Chapel Hill in the School of Information Library Science. One of the things I look at is online social network websites, and particularly the Facebook, while you're hearing from me today. I started studying social network sites in 2005, and I've continued my research to this day. I first studied in social networks with a survey at the campus. I wanted to see what sort of social networks students were using. And my numbers came back, and they were pretty interesting. At the time, MySpace was not popular. There was a 45% of undergrads on MySpace. But there was this one real outlier, Facebook. And I got numbers that say that there were 90% of undergrads on Facebook. So I said, oh, this is really something. This is a phenomenon to explore. So I'm going to read through some of my ethnic studies. And the first study I ran was a longitudinal study of the Facebook adoption of undergraduates in the class of the fall class of 2005 at UNC Chapel Hill. And if you can make out on that slide, you can see that those are actual numbers, and those represent the numbers of freshman accounts at UNC Chapel Hill, starting from week one, going up to week 16, so the first semester of these freshmen's college careers. So a couple of interesting things about this data. In terms of percentages, we're starting at 85%. So on that first day of college, 85% of freshmen had Facebook profiles. And then over the course of the semester, that grew to 94%. And there's another interesting facet of this data, that line below the blue line, the sort of pink line, is the percent of students who didn't have privacy on their profiles. Now, I'm happy about this data. Facebook changes fast. Facebook changes really fast. So the privacy statistics have changed, but I really thought that was amazing. At the end of that first semester, 90% of students had profiles that were open to anyone in the UNC network. So interesting also is that, you know, the first week of campus, there are 85% of students online. Now, how did those students find out about Facebook? I thought that was an interesting question. The answer turned out to be students were getting on the Facebook during their orientation. So the Facebook was a word-of-mouth viral phenomenon. The students would go and talk to their orientation leaders. Orientation leaders would say, well, here's this website. You need to be on it. And sure enough, the students would go back to orientation, get on the website, Facebook all their friends, and it completely took off. So that's what explains that really incredible adoption rate. It really sort of blew a hole in my study, because I wanted to study like the growth of social networks across the freshman class, but starting at 85%, I really couldn't do much of that. In the next slide, what I did, a couple of things we talk about commonly when we talk about the Facebook is the amount of information that's shared with Facebook. So what percent, I was interested in what percent of the freshman class that I was able to analyze was sharing particular data elements. Now, a couple of data elements sort of stand out here, and I'll read them off because they're probably hard to read. But Corvette at the top, the most shared event is birthday. Okay. So that's 96% of freshmen shared their birthday. And moving on to a little bit down with sexual orientation. 81% of students shared their sexual orientation. Moving over to another interesting facet, political orientation. 75% of students shared their political orientation. And sort of paradoxically, considering the amount of information that's being shared in these sites, only 25% put their mobile phone numbers on. But as you can see, just an incredible amount of information that's being shared publicly. And this is sort of a fairly new phenomenon. It's really been hard to get our heads around this. So next slide. I wanted to update my work. So in 2006, I sort of ran the same study again in the freshman class. And I found, well, the stats were pretty much the same. But the Facebook had changed a little over time. And so this freshman class, the class of 2006 that was coming in, they were experiencing again on Facebook. Well, Facebook had changed. They had high school students on, they had let other networks in, the Facebook was open to the public. I'm not sure if it was open to the public at the time, but it is now. And so the point of this data point is to show that these students were not only parts of networks that were only on their campus, but they were also parts of networks that were on other campuses. So this the Facebook has become a lot more heterogeneous. It has really pushed itself out into all sorts of different networks. And on the next slide, I thought this was another interesting data point, in that between the freshman class of 2005 and 2006, the average freshman in 2005 had about 9 messages on their wall. And in 2006, that number had grown to 45. So not only were students really using the Facebook a lot more, but they were sharing a lot more information, putting information out there about themselves. So there's, I've sort of run through a lot of numbers, but I just wanted to provide some context. And the overall context that I hope I provide is that on this site, there's a lot of information sharing, a lot of public information sharing, and certainly the trends are pointing to growth in that information sharing. And certainly there's been changes to the privacy, and I really commend Facebook for their changes in privacy. They have a really nice privacy structure, but the sort of point of being with Facebook is sharing your information with other people. So students are certainly sharing information at a very high level. So, and I want to transition next a little bit into how we can use Facebook as a tool for learning engagement. Because one of the great things Facebook does is it lets us engage our students, or fellow faculty, or fellow staff. It lets us engage each other in this really interesting way. So first of all, next slide, please. Let's go over a couple of caveats first. So what Facebook is and isn't. So Facebook is a social networking site, but it isn't a blog, it isn't a wiki, it isn't a CMS, it isn't a catch-all. It's this digital center of campus. So we have to sort of look at it as what it is. And so we have to develop some new ways of looking at it as a tool. So we can't really fit it into those old paradigms. Sure, it incorporates elements of blogging, wiki to a certain extent, but it's a unique tool in and of itself. Now, on the Facebook, students have an expectation of privacy. So coming in as a staff member, you have to understand that. Now, it may not make sense. The stats may not line up with this expectation of privacy. But in reality, students expect that their profile is only going to be viewed by their friends. Now, they know that their profile can be viewed by other people. But this expectation comes from the fact that, well, in reality, we're not always looking at random people's friends. We're looking at our friends. So basically, they get this idea that there is privacy in Facebook. They're not going to be, everything they do is not going to be watched. And when Facebook introduced the news feeds, which is an interesting feature we'll probably talk about today, that expectation of privacy was violated because all of a sudden everyone could see what everyone was doing. So there is a real expectation of privacy. And then finally, if you're going to be a faculty member on Facebook, you have to realize that you're not going to be able to get to everyone. So that's what I mean by non-participant. You're not going to be able to access students who don't want you to see their profiles. They can't do that. So there's a reality. You can reach a certain amount of your students with the Facebook, but not all students. And so moving on to the next slide, how do we get started? How do we as faculty or staff or graduate students or really get started using Facebook? Well, the obvious first step is to set up a profile. And a profile is sort of weird because it feels like a dating site. Maybe we're not on a dating market in this room, or some of us. But it does feel a little like that. I mean, putting that information out there about yourself, even to me, I feel a little weird about it. I'm sort of cautious about it. However, you sort of have to look at it through a different lens. And in a sense, you have to look at it as, here's this tool that can humanize you in the eyes of students. They're actually interested in what your favorite books are, what conference you went to, or a picture of your dog, and stuff like that. I mean, so the general idea is you have to start out with sort of baby steps. And that's okay. You don't have to go full hog the entire your first go around. But it's very important to create a profile. Next, so in Facebook you make friends. What is the behavior when it comes to friendship? Well, I sort of have this rule, which I call it a strict rule, but I'm not entirely sure it should be a strict rule, that you should allow students to friend you rather than you friending students. Because there's a power relationship there. And so, generally, I think it's more comfortable to let the power relationship go from students to faculty. If you want to become a friend of a student, then that's okay. But for you to impose friendship on a student, it's a little bit of a different story. Now, of course, if you're their advisor, if you have this relationship, you know, they're I'm not going to call this your fault. And finally, what you realize is that when you're on the Facebook, you are crossing contexts. You know the student in one context, but you're seeing them in their entire personal life context. So that is something you have to be mindful of, because you're going to see things that you're not going to see in the average daily, everyday, of being in class, and that sort of thing. You're going to be privy to a lot more information about students than you would through just normal interaction on the campus. Okay, so next we'll move on to how are some ways to create engagement on Facebook for kids. So basically, one of the prerequisites, sort of as I went over, you have to have a profile, you have to know how to use the system a little bit. So it's certainly okay to sit down with somebody who knows how to use the Facebook and say, how do I use this thing? Become friends amongst yourself first. Become comfortable with this thing. And then you can really sort of move on as a more experienced user. It's like anything else in life, really. And then I really see it that there's two main types of engagement. One is profile-based engagement, the other is what I call action-based engagement. I'm not sure about the title anymore. But the idea of profile-based engagement is when you're friends with people, you can share things with those people. So if you're friends with your students, if you're friends with your advisees or fellow staff members, it's a great way to spread information. It's a viral information tool. And now in terms of action-based engagement, there are things such as groups, events, notes, ads, shares, these various features of the Facebook that lets you sort of create actions where you're sharing information. The whole point of the Facebook, though, is that here's this sort of nexus of all these connections, and you're leveraging that social network to spread information. So we're really thinking of it that way. And basically what the Facebook has done is created all these tools where you can share information through the social network. So it's very interesting. Finally, moving on to my final slide. Just what are some strategies for actually, you know, once you've crossed a couple of those hurdles and you've moved on, what are some things you can do that actually are going to play a part in the relationship with the student through the Facebook? As we talked about previously, setting up things like groups and events. This event particularly was on the Facebook. It was a Facebook event that people could pass to each other and collaborate on and share notes about. That's great ways to engage people, to get them thinking. I mean, you know, we're all used to getting our email listserv announcements and meetings, but this is sort of a little bit different. It's and I like it personally, it's me. But and another thing that I've heard is that ads are very interesting in the sense that our faculty can create ads, which are sort of like the ads that you would see on the wall of a podium or whatever, but they're now on Facebook. And apparently they're quite good, from what I've heard. Finally, it's important to understand the student perspective. So basically, when you're using the Facebook, you do have to understand that context. One of the things that comes up is this idea of keeping tabs on our students with Facebook. For a lot of people in this room, part of our job is protecting our students. Now, for most of our students are adults, and the law in our eyes, but we play a guidance role, or you play a guidance role, in protecting those students and helping them become successful and stuff like that. So there's a couple of ways to look at keeping tabs on students. And one is, there's going to be stuff that goes on in the Facebook that may violate some rules here and there. It's going to go on whether or not it's on Facebook. So it's a really fine line if you choose to prosecute or not prosecute, that sort of thing. But it's also Facebook, aside from looking at it purely as a sort of surveillance tool, it's also a good way to actually sort of understand where your students are. If you have a student who hasn't shown up in class in a week or 2 weeks, or you may be getting a note from a parent saying, where is the student? The first thing a lot of people do is they look into Facebook. Have they logged in recently? And if they haven't logged in recently, that's a cue. That's a cue that there's something up. So the impairment doesn't always have to be in sort of the punishment role or the policing role. It can actually be in, here's just another way to actually see what's going on with these people who I care about and want to connect with. And finally, what the Facebook really does is all about is the creation of the place. I mean, it's this creation of a digital space where you can interact. So do with it what you like. Start with the tools and then grow from there. The Facebook really is the digital center of your campus. And that's really an interesting thing. It's interesting for a number of levels. I mean, we don't control it. It's a private corporation. but it's where the students are. And I think it's our role to go where the students are and to engage them. It only works out better for us that way. So now I'll pass over to Sarah.
Okay, thank you. Again, I'm Sarah Lowe with the Information Technology Division here at State, and I want to thank Leslie and Fred because I think they did a great job of introducing Facebook and social networking sites. And we can tell you a little bit about what our role is on campus. As an essential IT organization, our role for the most part is purely educational. Facebook is not in our domain. It's not something we can police. Our role is to educate students and faculty and staff, and I think that's important. Now, it's not just students we need to educate about how to use some of these tools. It's all three groups. About these sites, we want to encourage responsible behavior. We want to get people to think before doing. And with students, sometimes that's getting them to think 3, 4, 5 years down the road of what an action now might mean for them later. There are a few times in our role where we may have more of an enforcement role, and that's a really very few and far between. If there might be an instance where something started on campus and we have to provide logs or track information for campus police, but for the most part, again, our role is education. And some of the ways that we try to help educate the students and faculty and staff is we do offer workshops and short courses, all free. We don't have a specific workshop on social networking. We try to build it into courses that we already offer on security, when we talk about the basic computing account or the Unity account here on campus. So whenever we find a relevant place to talk about it, we try to bring in some things for them to remember. We do have a website on responsible computing that we try to keep updated when we come across articles that people have, where MySpace or Facebook is something is mentioned. We will put those on the website. We also talk about identity theft, personal safety, and things like that. And then we get to go around and talk to folks and help them work through things if they run into problems. And some of the key points that we try to cover in some of these workshops when we talk to people is exactly what Fred said. This is a fun thing for students to do. They're finding a sense of identity. They're discovering who they are when they come to campus. They're away from their parents. It is a good way to connect with others with similar interests. It is providing them a sense of community. On the other hand, let's think about what we're putting online. Let's be careful what we put online, because we certainly don't want it to come back and haunt you down the road. Employers are Googling you. They do want to find out what you're doing. They are trying to find you on Facebook. They are finding you. They're finding out about you. Does that matter? Well, hopefully not, but it does depend on what you put online. And it could be pictures. It could be text. You never know. A good question we tell them to think about is, would you want your, and fill in the blank, your parents, your spouse, your significant other, would you want someone to see that, and how would you feel about it? Think safety, identity theft, stalkers, etc. I've seen sites where students have their picture, their name, their age, their address. Fred referenced some of the statistics. All of this information is online, and there is a false sense of security on there that only my friends have access to my Facebook account. But you look at some of these students' accounts, and they have 1,000 friends. And you know, my definition of friends probably isn't quite that broad, but again, you want to see who has access to your account, and are they just an acquaintance, or are they a friend of yours? I think that as Facebook matures, there may be more granularity of access that's allowed and things like that. But for now, it is a friend is a friend. And then once people see your site, the main thing we try to get across to students sometimes is they can cut and paste that information. And once it's cut and pasted, it's really once you put it online, it's really out of your control. But things can be cut and pasted, photos, pictures, and they can be put somewhere else. And we all know that sometimes things never die on the internet. They live forever. So you can't necessarily limit who is seeing some of your information. But all that said, our main goal is to, again, encourage them to think ahead, to act responsibly, and think about what they're putting online. A couple other ways that we do educate students: in our new student orientation session for students in the summer, we are given 30 minutes to talk to incoming students. And last year, because we knew the social network was growing, we did introduce a 5 to 8 minute segment specifically geared towards social networking to try to, again, make these points to the students. For faculty and staff, we're involved in new employee orientation, and we also have a section of Quick Start, which is a business content offered to human resources. And again, we simply touch on these areas, we talk about them, and tell them where to get more information if they'd like more. Just as a little fact, I'm not sure if Sarah's going to mention this or not, the university is looking at or working on drafting a regulation that is going to address some of these issues of putting academic information on non-university servers. I'm not sure where that is in the process, but they have been working on it. But again, I think the main point that you're going to hear up here today is that this is here, it's not going anywhere, and so how can we work to make it a positive experience for students? How can we give them the information that we need? And our goal is to educate the students, and with that, I'll turn it over to Paul.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Our role in the Office of Student Conduct is one that I suppose strikes fear into the heart of students the most, and that is, I think the concerns about what the Office of Student Conduct might do with this information is the topic that gets the most airplay, technician or our student newspaper, and brought people out some, perhaps a year ago to a town meeting in our Student Senate Hall, outraged that we would even be considering looking at people's Facebook spaces and then holding them accountable for the behavior depicted there. The truth is, as Fred has said, this is just one type of a virtual community that existed really for a long time in varying states of sophistication. And here in the Raleigh area, specifically amongst the NC State students, the Wolf Web, and that will be known to most of the locals here, has been up and running, gosh, for years and years. And of course, that's a text-only environment, but we've been aware and we have responded on a fairly regular basis to incidents that have come to our attention through the Wolf Web. And as examples, there are faculty in our community who have felt harassed by the information, selected very specifically, and harassed some sexual nature based on the language in the Wolf Web. We've had people solicit academic misconduct on the Wolf Web and do that in a very brazen and open fashion. We had one young man who posted a bunch of information that he was going to kill himself on the Wolf Web on a specific day, a specific time. And of course, that didn't happen. It turned out to be just a bad-framed piece of performance art. But we rousted him up and got him into the office to ensure that that wasn't, in fact, going to happen. As it turns out, he and I had a long relationship prior to that anyway. So he was one of our frequent flyers. So very early on, students became aware that myself and the staff in the Office of Student Conduct were tuned into some of these things and would use that information when it was appropriate. And so, you know, Fred's notion and what Sarah has said, we're talking a little bit about a threshold. At what point do we get engaged? We've been navigating that fine line for, perhaps as many as 10 years. The advent of MySpace and Facebook really has brought that into a much more sophisticated arena with the images, the ability to post personal data and facts, to really be very fluid and very dynamic, to change on the fly, so dynamic in fact that a majority of our students just leave their page up all day long and they use it, some folks use it like they would a cell phone, and they'll post a note to their own wall saying, well, I'm off to Tompkins to go to English class, or, you know, I'm off to Harrelson for math, and with no really, no filtering whatsoever. And so we've become aware of those for a long time, and we've had to deal with some of these issues like public versus private. The perception, Fred, that students might have about that being private doesn't necessarily mean that's the reality. So we work with a lot of situations where students might want a certain thing to be the case, but the institution, the university, or the general society has a different and a more mature, perhaps, view of that. So when we talk about private communication, it's helpful to think about things like U.S. mail and our telephone calls and the things that we've heard just recently about some of the calls that have been taped as part of the Patriot Act and the problems in our federal government just recently and all the consternation brought about by that type of what's perceived as an invasion of privacy. So what our general community and what our country believes would be protected communication certainly don't include posting information to a network that's available to tens of thousands of people initially. All you had to have was a .edu suffix for your email address, and of course then they moved to high school ranks, and now as Leslie indicated, it's wide open. So that doesn't generally qualify as a protected or a private communication. And at this point, certainly everybody is welcome to join. Even if they perceive it to be private and activated the various protections that are in place and are provided, that are provided to address the very kind of things we're talking about, the truth is that defeats the entire purpose of enlisting, of having the Facebook page in the first place. The whole purpose of Facebook is to connect, is to meet people, is to align yourself and to explore who am I part of, where can I find my people. For those of us who are perhaps just a touch older, the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, does it ring a bell for folks? How can I connect myself with this star through people that I know and these various networks? This is just another game that's played on Facebook. That's another way to see how can I connect to the person sitting in the last row in the back of the room. Is there some way that I can do that? So it runs a little counter to that notion to then say, we're going to give you access to this entire network, but really, it's in your own best interest to narrow that down to your closest half a dozen friends and limit their access and really not join some of those wide open groups based on the problems that you might engage in there. That doesn't make any sense at all to a 17 through 22 year old. Probably wouldn't make much sense to me prior to that age anymore either. What should you do if you want your communications on Facebook to be private? Well, the easy answer is just don't get on Facebook. I mean, if you're really interested in some private communication, that's probably not the place to go about it. The compromise, though, is to actively engage in selecting friends and differentiating between that group and the group of acquaintances, and then the third and the largest pool, which are those other persons on the network. And to be a little bit selective about what information. There are certainly cases across the country right now where violence against other students has been linked to the initial discovery of that person, the targeting of that person, by taking a look at some web page information, specifically Facebook. We've had one instance within the last couple of years at NC State, what I would describe as regretted sex, where two men targeted a woman on campus based on some of the specific language and photographs that she included in her profile that she self-selected to place in that, and established a relationship with her that led to a party, some consumption of alcohol, consensual sex at that time, and then enormous regret on the part of all three, as it turned out, the day after. So not just, I want to differentiate with the genders there. But that was facilitated by their engagement with the Facebook. Is it a new tool for stalkers? People who want to do bad things, including stalkers, are always looking for an easier way to do that. They're always looking for a better way to not be discovered, to be anonymous. There is almost nothing in our society that is anonymous and as cool as using the computer. Now, the IT folks who are really sharp will tell you that, well, everything leaves traces and everything leaves tracks. For the average user, those things are essentially inaccessible. You can, through subpoena and through a variety of other mechanisms, gain access to that. But even today, some of that really takes dozens and dozens of staff hours in order to root out that information, and depending on its age, to run back to that page and all those types of things. So it is kind of sad to say that there have been, and there likely will continue to be some situations where people have maintained that anonymity to the general public's disadvantage. Stalkers are using it, and I certainly witnessed those situations myself. People are using the web and Facebook to harass, just like they've used the wolf web to harass, just like they use instant messenger to harass. All of these things are communication tools, and one of the key features in terms of how users can become inappropriate and rude and threatening is that they're just simply not communicating to somebody's face. And on a regular basis, I am flamed in effigy on the wolf web, and many of these are people that I've met and I know. I guess it would be in the acquaintance group for me. And there are things that none of these, and they're primarily men, that none of these men have ever said to my face. And I expect they never will. I don't expect that kind of communication. But the distance, Marshall McLuhan, I guess, the cool fire, years and years and years ago, talked about television. Cool fire. Okay. Thank you. I think it happened in my undergraduate days. It was a long time before Facebook. Okay. article Saturday the 27th in the News Observer. It's titled, Finally Found the One, Time to Open Up MySpace. And this was written by Allison Carr. And one of the references that Allison makes in this piece talks is a quote. Says, people's identities are being created through their MySpace accounts, says Michael Smalley, founder and director of the Smalley Marriage and Family Center in Woodlands, Texas. And I think that's very true, and I think it's important for us to remember that. These young people are creating identities. And now in the old days, for some of us, we used to do that face-to-face, and we used to go on dates, and we used to hold hands, and the first public displays of affection were an announcement of sorts that we had actually sort of engaged in a relationship with somebody, and of course nowadays, none of that's necessary. It's really instantaneous, much to the dismay of some of those students who maybe speak too quick when the feelings aren't reciprocal, and they find that out by return mail or by looking at the supposed boyfriend's or girlfriend's Facebook page only to find that they've been dumped. Communications have become very, very quick and very complex and very confusing, in part because we lack all the cues. In this cool medium, we lack all the cues associated with conversation. So the stalkers are out there. They include ex-boyfriends, ex-girlfriends. They include people that our students have never met, but who want to meet those students very badly. Friends from the past. The information is very easy to obtain, and of course now anybody can do that. It just simply takes a little bit of time, a little bit of experimentation, and an open portal. What should you do if you think you're being harassed or stalked? Tell someone. The biggest mistake that any person, specifically student, that any student would make in any conduct matter, in any situation where they feel uneasy, is to not speak up. The only crime that student could ever commit is not telling somebody, not telling a boyfriend, not telling a girlfriend, not telling a faculty member, somebody in IT, somebody in student conduct, a friend, like, will not speak. That's the greatest mistake that they would ever make. In large part, we would respond to that the same way we would a personal confrontation out in the brickyard, for example. It doesn't really matter that the nature of the medium in which the message is communicated is really immaterial for us. We perceive threats in spoken language just as we do in written language. And we spend some considerable time assessing that. Who's looking? As we've heard, everybody's looking. Parents are looking. Another quick anecdote. I present at Parents Orientation Summit for each of the sessions. And after a session, I was in the back of the room in Stuart Theater in this building when two parents approached me and said, thanks very much for your time. We need some help. Our son needs to move his room to another building on campus. I said, well, I'm not really with University Housing, but I know those staff, and I can make that referral. I said, but why would you make that assessment already? What has something happened? And the parent said, oh, well, the first thing that our son did was call him Ricky. The first thing Ricky did was he dialed up his new roommate's Facebook page. And it's full of pictures of alcohol use. There's kegs, and he's drinking, and there's parties at the beach. We just simply don't want to live with that student. And that's the first time that ever happened to me, and the only response I can think of is, Susan, I see sitting in the back room, this is the person you need to call. Let me make an appropriate referral. But now I'm prepared. Now I'm equipped, and this coming cycle, I'll work those kind of comments in. So parents are looking because they have access, not because they have the .edu, but because their students are concerned and show them that information. Hiring agents, interviewers for jobs, for scholarships, for law school, admission staff. I participate in a committee that reviews applications for students, both incoming freshmen as well as transfer, undergrad, and graduate. And I have certainly had some interest in it because I have a Facebook account. I had access to some of that information as well as part of the overall picture of who is it that wants to come to our community. Does this person represent a risk in some fashion that we need to be aware of, that we need to take note of? Certainly student conduct is looking. People tell us all the time, did you see so-and-so's Facebook page? And we'll look. We'll say, well, no, but I'll go take a look. And it certainly doesn't mean that we're generating conduct action based on every time we see a picture of a student drinking a beer at the beach. And so we regularly have conversations in the staff and with other colleagues in the division, and then minimally once a year when the student conduct officers, and I can see some of my colleagues in the office here from other UNC system schools, when we get together each May, this is a common topic of discussion. What are you doing? Where do you set the line? What's the threshold? And then how do you explain and justify that with students? So these, as the electronics become more sophisticated, and I actually said this to Sarah before we started, our culture's got a long history of our ethics not keeping pace with our access. So from the early days in telephones and party lines, people going, good party lines. Talk to your parents. Okay. From those very first days, there were ways to eavesdrop, ways to access information that maybe we shouldn't have had access to. We have, we've done that. We've listened, we've been curious, we've peeked, we've cheated, we've done all those kinds of things. So it really shouldn't surprise us that we continue to struggle with that and that our ethics aren't really up to speed yet with the technology associated with some of the Facebook issues. Judicial affairs officers are looking, our police are looking. They've got EDU suffixes for their email addresses. It was a significant crime that's being prosecuted in Cordova County right now, an alleged set of thefts for pizza delivery folks, an allegation that someone attempted carjacking and then shot a woman while she fled in her car on the perimeter of our campus very early this fall. There's a couple of our students, young men, who are currently in jail. As a result of those charges, in part, the campus police were able to assemble their case based on their review of the Facebook page. Students came to them and said, I have no idea who this guy is. Well, how come you're in 17 of the same groups? And why is this picture on your Facebook page? And how come he's posting to your wall 6 times today? So it was a real reality check for those students that you couldn't lie, that you had to be straight up in your communication. And somebody actually had the ability to do some reality testing for you. Sarah mentioned the notion of digital permanence. And that is probably the second greatest error that I see students making. The notion that, and think about our own youth, the ability to sort of live in the here and now, and the ability to project into the future, that bone maybe isn't yet fully formed in the heads of young people, and maybe not some of us even yet. But the notion of I'm doing it now, it's funny, it's hilarious, and here's a picture of Will just bent over, double drunk on the ground, wearing somebody else's shorts on his head, and that's what he had taken off the Facebook page this morning. That goes round and round and round, and it has the possibility of coming back to haunt Will or Ricky or Susie or whomever really for the remainder of their life. And I'll give one short anecdote to support that, which is really horrifying. In University Towers about 10 years ago, two young people had a blossoming young relationship, and the young man had a digital video camera and filmed a couple in a very a set of intimate acts. Anybody know what I mean by that? And he saved that visual video file into a folder, but he didn't lock that folder. He had no protections in place on the network that he happened to be using. Somebody else in that building was snooping on the party line, as it were, and located that video file and viewed that, quickly sent it to a couple of his friends. In about 72 hours, it had gone around the world and came back with comments from Japan, from Sweden, from Denmark, Switzerland, from all elements of the UK. And about every 18 months or so, it continues to cycle back through the community. Well, the relationship lasted about another 7 seconds, and the embarrassment and the humiliation was just really too great. And these are young people. They just had no ability to make sense out of what happened and what that might mean. The reputation that might be established. And one of the things that I can't help but think about is that it was about 10 years ago when a woman was a first year student. Well, this woman, that she was 18, and she's now about 28. And at the point that she is in her life right now, I think it's reasonable to assume that she's deserved right, as are all our students. But she's probably done with school, she's probably out in the career someplace, she may be married, she may be starting a family. What do you suppose is going to happen in 6th or 7th or 8th grade? When her son or her daughter comes home, maybe 4, 5, 6 years out from now, and says, this guy in class showed me this stuff and said it was you. What can you tell me about that? 5 or 6 years from now, the level of access that our children will have as compared to now will be so much more sophisticated. You know, everybody will be carrying a device that has this web enabled, and everything will be wireless. Our shoes will be wireless, and everything will be wireless, okay? I just can't get my head around the notion of how is that, if this all plays out, how's that person going to be able to make some sense out of that? Even then, even given what we might assume about the electronic world at that point, that she made a mistake. She made an error, didn't think about the future. And so that's the grimmest horror story that I have about that. So on a regular basis, when we're talking to students, clubs, organizations, we try to weave this into orientation, we talk about this very issue that Sarah mentioned, which is think in the long haul. Think about what this means and how that might be stored and retrieved and saved and used at some point in the future. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody. I'm Sarah Stein, faculty member in the Department of Communication in College of Humanities and Social Sciences, and I want to pick up on what people have been talking about and talk about a bit from the faculty perspective. I also want to start by trumpeting Paul on dire examples. Well, we have one very tragically here right now in North Carolina, which is a young man was shot by a police officer in a heightened situation. They were approaching his house because he had been identified as part of a group that stole PlayStation, and the reason they went in a SWAT team mode was because pictures of him on the web had been seen with an arsenal of guns. A roommate was also involved in the theft, so they assumed that he, being the roommate, would also have guns. Later, I've read a lot about this whole situation. One of the other friends said, oh, it was just a prank. It wasn't real. They weren't real guns. Just prank. I think one of the things that doesn't get communicated easily is irony, or it's just a game. You know, that smiley face emoticon doesn't always convey itself when you're seeing it in the way that we're talking about. And clearly, it didn't in this case. But the thing that I wanted to speak to today about is twofold, and again, very much from a faculty perspective. One is hearing everything that you've heard and seeing this as an extraordinary phenomenon. But what do we need to do as educators? We're at a university, that's our mission, in relation to students using it, Facebook and other social networking sites. And secondly, what possibilities are there to harness this extraordinary energy that's being poured into this connecting mode? It's an amazing phenomenon in that way. It truly is a phenomenon. And that energy, that desire to connect, that desire to communicate, that desire to play with forms, that playing around with different media, images and text, and I have no doubt it'll evolve and there'll be a lot more senses added to that. There's something to really look at and to think about from a pedagogical point of view and what it means for us to think about educated citizens in the future. So I want to start just by mentioning a study that I had seen in preparation for today. The Educational Texting Service was reported in the Chronicle of Higher Education in October, ran a test to roughly 3,000 students from high schools, two-year and four-year colleges across the country. And what the test was of what they considered to be basic information literacy. 13% passed. 13% of high school students, college, two-year and four-year. Now, they themselves say it wasn't the test that will be the thing that will be the final analysis. But even using basic rough estimates of what we would consider to be information literacy or fluency on the part of students, only 13% of those 3,000 students passed. What does this tell us? It tells us that we make a lot of assumptions as an older generation who were born very often before computers were in, that the generation that is born with computers as part of the wallpaper along with television and everything else know what they're doing in ways way beyond us. And that is true to a degree. Certainly for the people who had never seen a Facebook profile, having the ability to set that up and to keep it fluid and dynamic is something that most people, as I'm looking around this physical audience, probably aren't doing or necessarily feel themselves as comfortable doing. But the assumption that they have, both the critical judgment that the other people have talked about and the understanding of what's really going on in those sites is false, I would say, if we can even count on that kind of test. And I would, as a faculty member, I've talked to a lot of other faculty, and we would say from our own anecdotal experience, we don't see the level of enormous understanding and fluency in information use that is always assumed. So I wanted to bring up a few points that I think as this university and perhaps other educational institutions should really be thinking about as part of our educational curriculum. We have had at NC State in the past years a computing one credit course that's gone by the wayside for the most part because students come in able to send email attachments, etc. And that's what's been understood as information literacy or fluency. So my suggestion is that we have to recreate that understanding and think about, for instance, should there be a course even beyond the 5 to 8 minutes in the orientation that students have to pass. So let me bring up a couple of points that I think would be at least worth having discussion. First of all, do they know about potential civil litigation for libel, invasion of privacy, and misappropriation of a license? That is all possible with Facebook. If Will decides that he wants to put himself in a picture with Cameron Diaz, she could sue him. And Will, by the way, so. University policy. Should there be a university-wide policy on the practice of evaluating Facebook for future student employment? Students who are going to be employed at the university, the administrators have the right and do take a look at what is posted and can make judgments based on that. Does there need to be a policy on that, or is it enough, and should there be a very clear understanding that every student has understood that that will happen if they're interested in being employed by the university? Besides the other longer-term repercussions that Paul and Sarah were talking about, which is other employers are going to happily come by and look at Facebook if they want to see what kind of person they're going to hire. By the way, you probably also are aware of that Miss USA controversy just recently, where a title was stripped, given back, the other title not. Both of those were web-based and much earlier video footage of behavior. Students, I think, need to understand what it means that Facebook claims ownership to all content that's posted. That is what Facebook does. Now, this could be an interesting challenge to intellectual property laws that they exist, which is a big part of this digital information age. There are a lot of challenges to it, and there are a lot of concerns about intellectual property. And perhaps this aspect of Facebook would become part of that. But it's not clear to me that students understand that. So whatever they post up there, Facebook can use in whatever way they want. To that point, there are opt-out controls on Facebook. But if the students aren't aware of them, as Fred pointed out, most of the sites are not private. If students aren't really savvy about what it means to opt out and go and find the opt-out checkpoint and to check opt out, Facebook can sell and does sell all of their information to marketers. So, you know, the spam and the third class mail and the solicitations and all of that are just becoming more and more aggressive because they're actually marketing from that material. I think there's a good safety role, a rule that we could talk to students about, which is if you wouldn't display certain information in physical space, don't display it in virtual space. My colleague and friend Harry Nicholas, who's the assistant director of Unix and web services in ITD here, made a wonderful metaphor, I thought, or analogy that I thought would be very useful. We had a teaching learning technology roundtable session a couple of months ago on privacy, and he said, here's the way I see it, which is that when you enter your home and lock the door behind you, it's akin to using a RAP ID and authentication, right? You go in and you unlock your virtual site, whatever it is, because you have an ID, a login, and a password. And he said, but what people don't realize is they then undress in front of a window on which the curtain has been pulled down and feel no hesitation about it because they're in a safe environment. What they don't understand is that curtain can be raised electronically from a remote site online. And how that works and what those technical aspects are about are not currency that necessarily any of us really have. And I think that if we're going to think about ourselves again as an educational institution for the 21st century, I think this starts to be something we have to think about as part of our curriculum. There is a possibility that we could say that our 27,000 undergraduates can just go be burned and then they'll learn. But I don't think that's what our mission really is about. And so I think this bears real thought. I know that Leslie is putting together some resources and making them available on the Facebook website, and I just wanted to mention Tracy Vitrano's 5 things to think about when using Facebook. She's put it up on the web. It's available for everybody or anybody to use. It's what they use at Cornell University to educate their students about the use of Facebook, and I think we could really think to encourage all faculty and instructional staff to be giving that to our students as well, make sure they're aware of it. Having said that, I also want to get to the second topic. I haven't seen a lot of examples yet of using Facebook in terms of really being integrated in a learning activity per se. But because of the energy, because of the potential there, I suspect that will happen, and I think we want to think about that happening. It certainly is an amazing community builder. We've seen blogs being used, iChat, people in using course management systems often will have a synchronous chat mode, but it doesn't often have pictures. Facebook gives pictures. I think these things are going to develop. We have something that's used very significantly at this university called GIS, Geographic Information System, which enables you to map and create visualizations, both of terrain, but ultimately of other kinds of data, could be used for social science data, etc. But it also allows you to locate yourself in space. And there could be a really interesting intercultural, international situation where students using Facebook could also employ GIS as these things are delivered more fluently and be able to see where the students are that they're connecting to. It could be in other countries. I think there's a lot of possibilities for something that we hold dear in the educational institution, which is the idea of people coming to know each other within their own context and to understand them within their own lives. So I would like to see more of that kind of energy being put into harnessing this, as I said, because I think that there are many ways we're looking to enliven the teaching in different disciplines. We see a tremendous fall off in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics interest in our students starting in K-12 and continuing on in the university. And we need to turn that around. And I think that these kinds of social networking sites may very well form a foundation for doing some of that. So I encourage us to look further. Thanks.
Hey, my name is Will Galvis. First, I'd like to say thank you for the invitation to speak this afternoon. I'm kind of here to give like a student perspective on Facebook and kind of what we think about it and how we see it. So as you can see, I got some positive aspects, some negative aspects, and some like just different tools that students use in general on Facebook. Positive things that like we like to do or like we see on Facebook is we can keep track of our friends really easily. If your friend moves to Colorado or across the world, we can still talk to them. We don't have to take outrageous charges for calling them. We don't have to do any of that stuff. It's almost instantaneous. You can leave a message on their wall, or you can send them a private message. They get back to you. It's really, really nice. We can show pictures to our friends. Apparently, it's claimed to be the number one picture sharing website in the world. I would not doubt that. You can go anywhere in the world, take your pictures. You can post them while you're there. Your friends back at home can look at them. It's great. You can also advertise for events, like it's your birthday coming up, and you're going to have a party. You can say, my birthday party's coming up. Come. You can go through, you can select your friends, which ones you want to invite, or you can make like a public event. You can have everybody come, you can have the information available to just a small group of friends or anybody in the world. So that's the positive thing that we like to use it for. There's a lot of negative aspects, and the first negative aspect is kind of they don't have a slogan Like, it could be Facebook, the ultimate social networking site, or Facebook, stalker friendly since 2003. Either way, because really there's way too much personal information that's available on these sites, and people that opt out of not going on these sites is because of just that reason. They don't want everybody knowing about them, where they are at any given time, all that. And it's kind of an extent of how much people want to use it. People can log on once a month, once a week to see just what's going on, what's happening. And then there's other people that choose to post everything from their class schedule, their home address, and their phone number, and when they'll be at their house. So anybody can find out anything they want to about these people. And you never know who's looking, because it's open to anybody now, not just college students, not just your friends. Anybody can look at this information if you choose to put it out there. And it's not that hard to get, so stalker friendly since 2003. You really can't avoid people on there. If you're on there, other people are on there, they can get to you, they can just, you can block an account, they can create another account and keep poking at you. They can just take that jerk inside of them and kind of foster it online, and this is a good place to do it. The pictures, like I said, the pictures that you post on there, they will eventually come back to haunt you, as we had some students in Alexander last year find out. They were drinking underage in their dorm room, put pictures of it on the internet, and then couldn't figure out how they got in trouble. So, and another kind of negative aspect is, like, the amount of real communication between you and your friends can diminish. Like, some of my friends just got engaged, and we found out via the Facebook, which was not friendly at all, so. And if my profile was still there, and I had thought about this about a week and a half ago, there were 700 plus random people that had asked to be my friends. I just kind of left in limbo. I didn't confirm them, I didn't deny them. But there was over 700 people that I had never met in my life before that had heard about me somehow and asked to be my friend. So these people were just coming from everywhere. The last thing that I want to talk about is kind of the tool aspect that Facebook can be used for. In, I guess it was just December of 04, we started up the Pirate Captain for President campaign, and we used this very heavily. We used Facebook almost exclusively to do what we needed to do. We created an outside website. Then we went on to the Facebook and we used the power to tell everybody on campus about it, to go through and inform every single person that this was going on. In the end, we had about 1,300 people sign up and said, please keep me informed about what's going on. We were able to share our pictures with them, our videos, our platform, everything with these people. And it was all done within probably an hour, hour and a half. It was that quick and it hit that many people. If it's going to be used as like a teaching tool, the thing that you need to realize is students don't always stay on this every 20 minutes and check it. Some people are on and off every month. Some people are just alluded to it. I checked it last time before today, probably like 2 weeks ago, so there's just a plethora of stuff that I'm sure I've missed but don't really care about. If you're going to get on this and you're going to try to engage your students or other people, you need to know you're putting like a really human face on this. People that are on Facebook, students use it to kind of see other people in like a human way. You know what the person looks like, you know what they like to do, you know where they like to go, the books they like to read, the movies they like to watch, what they do in their spare time. So if you get on here, you need to be aware that your students or the people that you're going to interact with are going to know this information about you if you choose to put it out there. And if you are one of the people that get on there and just put your name on there and that's it, you're going to be looked at as one of the people that's probably someone to avoid. That's about all I've got for that right now. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, panelists. And he mentioned something that everybody seems to want to talk about when they see a Facebook profile. We'll see here in just a minute. We're going to pull up his telly there, not Leslie there. There's an aspect of Facebook that I've not seen in any of the other social networking sites called poking somebody. And everybody wants to talk about the poke. They want to know, what is this poking thing all about? And as you can see on the right hand side, I've been poked a lot. And I actually sent an email out to all my buddies and say, hey, poke me.
so I can show, you know, the poke will show up on my website here. So everybody wants to talk about the poking. What's the poking all about? Well, it's what you see is what you get. That's all it's about. It's just a way to draw attention to yourself, to one of your friends, and say, I was poked. And so I could poke back at any one of these people. What would happen is on their Facebook profile, it would show that they had been poked by me. And then they can ignore the poke or they can poke me back. And that's really all there is to it. But what was interesting is I have two colleagues that, are you poking people for me now? Okay. I have two colleagues that wanted to learn more about Facebook. And so I had set up an account just so I could sort of see what it was all about. And so I set the two of them down and had a computer. So I was sitting in the middle, and I had one on one side, one on the other, and I pulled up my Facebook account, and they said, what's this poking thing? And I explained it, and at the same time, simultaneously, one of them said, oh, how cool, and the other said, oh, I'm horrified. So, and you know who you are. So, again, it's just another interesting aspect about Facebook that, you know, creates lots of questions, and people want to know what that is all about, and if there's some other meaning hidden behind the poking or not, and I guess that's user-determined at this point. So, we're now at the point where we're ready to field your questions, and again, for our webcast audience, send that email or an instant message as we've instructed earlier.